The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Sports Talk 1240 is brought to you by DraftPot.com. DraftPot is changing fantasy sports. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with promo code SportsTalk1240 and receive a 100% deposit bonus up to $1,500. And now, Sports Talk 1240.
All right, well, good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to Hour 1 of Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB Freeport, Long Island, New York. Bill Donahue taking you through the first hour on this Sunday night. And our engineer, Brian Graves, is right across the way. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. Up first, we'll welcome in the enforcer for many New York Rangers, Toronto Maple Leafs, and Winnipeg Jets teams. The legendary Ty Domi will join us. In the second half, we'll talk to the closer for the 1986 world champion New York Mets, Jesse Orosco. So sit back and relax. Enjoy Sports Talk 1240 tonight on GBB. We got some great stuff ahead in the next few hours. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow us on our Facebook page titled Sports Talk 1240. No surprise there. You'll find sports information, show information, and more. So stop by, give us a look. Then you can press that button and give us a like. You can also follow us on Twitter. It's at SportsTalk1240. And all past shows can be heard on our website at www.SportsTalk1240.com. Well, my first guest is known for his role as an enforcer. As I said, he played for the Maple Leafs, the Rangers, and the Winnipeg Jets over a 16-year NHL career. More penalty minutes than any other player in the history of the Leafs, and he ranks third overall in penalty minutes in NHL history. Recently, this gentleman debuted his first book called Shift Work. The memoir, it gives many great perspectives into his life as a legendary hockey player. He's currently promoting that book all across Canada. I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Ty Domi. Ty, good evening.
Hey, Bill. Thanks for the introduction. How you doing?
Good, good, good. It's great to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm more than happy to be on with you.
It's great to be here.
Especially you're in the Long Island, you know, so people must wonder Ty Domi can actually write a book and spell.
Oh, they've been waiting to hear from you. We got a lot of traffic on Twitter. The people definitely looking forward to hearing us tonight. Let me get right to it, Ty. Your folks are of Albanian – well, you're of Albanian descent. Your folks fled to Canada from communist Albania after World War II. Tell us a little bit about that. They give you any stories about their struggles at all?
Well, my dad always told us, about the war. And he did have a piece of bullet still in his head, and we always felt that he made us all feel – my brother and my sister and I – he did leave with his brother when he was communist, and it was quite interesting how they escaped. And they were at many different countries before they got to Canada. And, it's really the book was – the whole purpose of the whole book was really to dedicate it to my father after, what he did for me. And he wasn't around to watch my whole career or meet my kids, but I wanted to dedicate the book to my dad.
Sure. Now, you were selected in the second round, 27th overall by the Leafs in the 88th entry draft. You played for the Peterborough Petes. When did you start to develop your particular style of play as an enforcer, as a tough guy, Ty?
Well, that's a pretty interesting question, Bill. It started when I was 14 years old, actually, playing with 19, 20-year-olds, Junior C, and I was fighting those guys at that age when I was 14. Then when I was 15, I was kind of doing the same thing in junior B with guys, and I actually 18, 19, 20 year olds, and I was 15, and I had 350 penalty minutes that year. And then I started junior hockey, and I ended up beating the toughest guy in the league the first game when I was 16. So it was all started from there, if you really want to know. And it continued, and when I got to the NHL, it was one of those things where I always thought I could win, and I always wanted to be the best, and it didn't matter how small I was, and all the doubters that doubted me and said I wasn't big enough or good enough, I just I was a street kid. I was brought up from parents who didn't push me to do anything, and I chose chose to do it my way, kind of my whole career, and that's how I did a book now.
You sure
did. I did it my way.
Yeah, you did. And you played.
Did you read it, Bill?
Oh, sure did. Yeah, I was paging through it again last night to get some of my material.
Okay.
You did a real nice job.
Well, thank you very much. And it was a long process, you know. And the only way every year since I retired, they want to do a book on me, and then they want to do a book on fighting, and then all of a sudden, you know, there's becoming issues of concussions and fighting's, you know, kind of going away in the game, and then, you know, they see that I had the most fights in NHL history, and I really didn't want to talk about that. So finally Simon Schuster said, okay, we find you an interesting guy. We want to do your book. What do you want to do your book about? So I finally, here's somebody finally smart enough to, you know, understand that I was only going to do it my way. And I said,
sure.
I told them I'd give them headlines of my childhood and my career and life after my career. And, but more it was about giving life lessons and life values that I learned throughout my life and my career, and, you know, from my father, and dedicated to my father. But the one thing that I really wanted to do was dedicate one chapter to the people, the everyday people, because I really didn't want to talk about my job and why I had the most fights in NHL history. Mm-hmm. It was part of my job, and there was no rearview mirror. So I really wanted to shine a positive light over the book, even though I had the most fights. And the people in Chapter 11 are the people that I really stick up for, and that was something that I wouldn't do the book without. And that's the everyday person, the waiters, the coffee shop people, the taxi cab drivers, the TSA people, the shoe shine people. That kind of sums it up on why I did the book. And so far, I've been in Canada for the last 3 weeks, and it's been number one bestseller in Canada, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I see on Facebook you're doing really well. We're talking.
Yeah, well, I heard you say you're on Facebook. You're on what else? You're on Twitter.
Twitter.
Well,
yeah.
I'm on Instagram now since Justin Bieber tweeted me when Max played against.
Oh, he did.
He didn't tweet me. Instagram me. He took a picture of us. He came and sat with me in the box. Against the Max's game against the Islanders, and he took a picture of me and Instagrammed it. So now I'm an Instagram guy too. So I'm learning how to do all this stuff.
Mr. Social Media.
Yeah, well, I'm learning. I'm getting there.
All of us. Yeah, I hear you, Ty. Speaking of Ty Domi tonight. Now, you were traded from the Leafs. You came to New York. How'd you feel about that trade, Ty?
Actually, it was totally excited. You know, Madison Square Garden, and, you know, when you're 19, 20, 20 years old, you're always dreaming of being in the NHL. Madison Square Garden was, you know, the place to be. And then I ended up, you know, kind of becoming a fan favorite because especially the New York fans, they mm-hmm. love that kind of player. And Nicky Fatia was a guy who did that before me in Toronto, in New York. And, you know, Toronto, they had other guys, Tiger Williams and other guys, but Nicky Fatia was the guy here, and people told me how popular it was, and I couldn't believe it. Once I got into my first fight, it felt like, you know, all the fans just loved me, and it was a great feeling to play in New York. It's a special memory, and I'll always remember.
Yeah, they take you under their wing, that's for sure.
Yeah, the Islander fans, on the other hand. I had to get a few police escorts out of there, but it's okay. We had a lot of fun, you know, just like in Philly.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun in Philly, the Islander fans. You know, we had a lot. That one series we had against the Islanders was just one vicious series. It was unbelievable, actually.
Who was your buddy on the Islanders most of the time, Ty? Was it Kenny Baumgartner?
That was early in the day, yeah.
Yeah.
Him and Mick Fakoda, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Mick Fakoda, yeah.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with those guys. But then, you know, I went through a lot of guys on Long Island. They always had guys there, so, you know, it was fun playing the Islanders.
Sure. Now, you mentioned in the book about Roger Nielsen, the coach, that you really enjoyed playing for him.
Yeah, he was a special guy. He gave me an opportunity in the NHL, and he was that guy that actually told me that after the game, you know, he called me in the room. I thought I was getting sent down, and he actually called me in the room and told me my dad died during the game, and it changed my life. That moment changed my life. So when somebody tells you when your dad died, you always remember that person. It was pretty emotional time then, for sure.
Definitely. Now, some of the other guys, let's talk about on the Ranger Club, because you came from Toronto to a pretty good hockey club. Brian Leetch. Talk a little bit about Brian, Hall of Famer.
Well, the best defenseman I ever played with, and the greatest guy, and had a lot of fun with him, spent a lot of time with him, learned a lot from him. He was a true, you know, one of the best teammates I've ever had. And when Mark Messier came, you know, he really helped us all. And I think out of all the guys, Mess helped. I think Brian Leetch really benefited from it, and they won a cup, so it was great. I stupidly asked for a trade, but the trade worked out, and my career kind of took off. So
yeah, it did.
Even though I missed a cup, you know, I played a lot of playoff games in Toronto. Actually, they say I played the most playoff games the last four decades in Toronto. So I played a lot of playoff games. Unfortunately, I just didn't win it, but I have no regrets. And except the knee, my elbow in the playoffs when I was playing my best hockey. But other than that, there wasn't too many regrets I had. I feel blessed to play that long, and now I feel blessed to tell a story about it and go around and sign autographs for people the last 3 weeks. It's been quite overwhelming, but very humbling.
Beautiful. Now, did you learn anything specific from Messier?
Well, I was a young guy, and he won five cups before he got here, so I always wanted to, you know, just kind of take in everything he was doing. And the one game that he really taught me a lot in respect was the game I had two fights and the goal, and I was third star, and I was feeling pretty good about myself. But I rode my stick after I scored, and I did the speed bag after a fight, and I kind of got the better of the guy a couple times, and he pulled me in a trainer's room and didn't want to embarrass me in front of everybody, and told me I have to knock that stuff out, and if I want respect from my peers. And he was right. It worked, and things changed after that.
The rest is history, as they say.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Now, did you miss, Ty, the New York aura, the celebrity, rubbing elbows with big shots, the glitz? Did you miss that?
No, I didn't miss it. I've kind of had it my whole life, in Toronto and life after my career. So it's kind of, been around my life and around my kids' life. So, I don't miss it. It's part of my life. So it's not something that I do miss, because it's in my life, every day still now. So it's not, it is what it is, right? Everybody's
exactly.
Got a different way. And, at the end of the day, I treat everybody the same, and I don't try to pretend, and I'm just the same as I was when I started my career as I am now.
Way to be. Well, we're speaking with Ty Domi tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Do you feel bad about leaving the Rangers before they made it to the promised land, Ty?
Well, I wasn't playing much, and I felt pretty confident in my ability, and I asked to be traded stupidly. The Rangers were in the playoffs when I got traded. I always tell people, and when I got to Winnipeg, they were in last place. Mm-hmm. Well, when I got to Winnipeg, we won 13 in a row, and we almost ended up going all the way, and the Rangers missed the playoffs that year. Unfortunately, fortunately for the Rangers, but unfortunately for me, the following year, the Rangers ended up in a shortened season, ended up winning the cup. So, things happen for a reason, and, it might – my career got much better as a complete hockey player after I left the Rangers.
It did. You had a couple of good years in Winnipeg. You played with some great guys, Timo Solani, Keith Tkachuk. Your job was really to protect those guys.
That's what it really was all about. And, Timo Solani scored 76 as a rookie, and that was a real memorable year, obviously. And, and then I ended up going to Toronto, and they brought me there to do the same thing with Sundin, and we lasted a long time together in Toronto, and we had a lot of fun. And unfortunately, we didn't win a cup, but it was a lot of fun.
They don't win many in Toronto, do they, Ty?
Hey, easy now, easy now. Come on.
Oh boy.
I know the Islanders won quite a few. I grew up watching Brian Trottier.
It's been tough the last few years, though.
My guys.
It's been tough, and it was tough leaving the Coliseum, because that place had a lot of good memories for a lot of the Islander fans.
Yeah, it did. And it felt weird watching my son play against the Islanders in Brooklyn. It was different. you know, I hope people in Long Island really figure it out. You know, politics are always a tricky thing when you're dealing with politicians.
And that's exactly what it was, Ty, yeah.
Hopefully they wake up and smell the coffee and have some common sense and bring them back there one day.
Exactly. That's the wish of many of the Islander fans. Now, was it a tough adjustment coming from New York into Winnipeg?
Well, yeah, it was. It was a little culture shock for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and I say the one story in the book when, you know, there was a country bar in Winnipeg called the Calamina Club, and the China Club were a hot spot in New York. And I think it was a couple weeks later, somebody from the New Jersey bench said, "Hey, Domi, how does it feel going from the China Club to the Calamina Club?" So I looked over to the bench, and I didn't see who it was. Nobody was, you know, fessing up. So I looked over. The faceoff was right in front of their bench. So I looked over, and there's John McClain pretending he's tying his skates below the boards. And I looked down. And I actually confronted him the following summer at a golf tournament. I went right up to him in a golf range, joking around. And he thought I forgot.
Oh, man, good one. Now, yeah. you were sort of a team leader. You took over that role in Winnipeg. In the book, you mentioned a way that you brought the team together.
Yeah, when I brought the two days in the two-bedroom apartment, there's guys from everywhere. You know, there's Russians, there's Finns, there's Swedes, there's Canadians, there's Americans, there's French Canadians, there's Czechs. Russians, you name it, they're from but everybody's on their own island, you know.
Yeah,
I learned from Mess in New York that everybody's like family, and I really always felt like that even before Mess got there. But he, you know, kind of assured me that's the way it is when he got there, because he won five cups and just the way he treated people, and you know, from everybody, right, from the trainers to, you know, the player like me who was kind of like the 23rd player. To the top player, and it takes everybody to win, and that's how Mess treated everybody, and everybody was part of it, and that was what I brought to Winnipeg and brought to Toronto with me. And we had a lot of success in Toronto. Unfortunately, we didn't win a cup, so
right.
But we had a lot more success than they've had the last 10 years. I can tell you that, man. It's been
it's been
tough sledding in Toronto.
Yeah, Ty, that's true.
Babcock will turn around.
Well, we're speaking to Ty Domi tonight. He's got a new book called Shift Workout. Talk about some of the incidents you had through the years, Ty. How about the one with Ulf Samuelsson?
Well, thank you for the book plug again, and you just got to keep putting in. It's 3 weeks bestseller in Canada, too.
Oh, all right, yeah.
you keep leaving that out. You know that, right?
Pulitzer Prize down the road.
Number one bestseller as long as I am. And it's been 3 weeks now. You know what I'm saying?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll keep that in front.
The Ulf Samuelsson thing was something that, you know, just happened at the time. And, you know, he's egging me on, obviously. And I hit him in the right spot, I guess, and knocked him out. So it was one of those things that I felt bad about. But I paid the price. I suspended 8 games. But at the end of the day, that's something that, you know, people want to know why I did it, and I explain it in the book.
Right, exactly.
I explain the details in the book. And the two Probert fights, I explain detail in the book. But I didn't really want to talk about why I had the most fights. You know, that was part of my job. And I really didn't want to have no rearview mirrors.
You did develop a relationship with Bob Probert, though.
Yes, I did, after our careers, and he was just a sweetheart of a guy and a real family guy and, you know, all about his kids like I am. And we had a lot of things in common. And obviously, he wanted to be the best. I wanted to be the best. And we always had that rivalry going. And I know how he felt, and he know how I felt, because we were the guys everybody always wanted to be and wanted to beat.
Right.
So that was, you know, the special bond we had. And when we did a show together in Canada, we ended up getting to know each other better and had some real emotional conversations and talked about different things to each other. And, you know, he actually he said to me, because he said, you know, I knew I couldn't hurt you. And I said to him, I know, so did I. You know? So that was the difference, like the mentality. I always knew I can beat him because it's the first time I fought him. He didn't hurt me, right? And he couldn't hurt me. So I always had that in my mind that I can beat them. And that's, I think, what helped me being so much smaller than them. And, you know, I was kind of fearless, and that's how I approached every fight I had. And I had them mostly for my teammates, but those Probert fights were more, you know, who's going to be the champion kind of thing, you know?
Right.
That was the thing. He was the king, you know?
Yeah, and everybody wants a piece of the king, that's for sure.
Yeah.
The late Bob Probert, of course, we're speaking about.
And then when I beat him, everybody kind of thought I was the king, but I was just a little bit smaller.
Yeah. Definitely. But those are some great stories in the book. Also, yeah. How about the night, Ty? You said something I thought was kind of funny to the press after an incident in Philadelphia where I think you sprayed water at a guy who was screaming at you.
Oh, the Philly fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an interesting thing. I actually did a talk show last week, and he actually they had him call in, and I explained. I explained in the book exactly what happened.
Yeah.
It was nice. He called in and, you know, kind of reassured what I said, and that's exactly what happened. So I kind of got the lawyers out of the mix and made it, you know, made it all go away. And at the end of the day, it cost me 4 tickets for the first 2 rounds of the playoffs in Toronto, and put him up in a hotel with his family. And it was a lot less money than keep paying lawyers. And, you know, it's getting crazy.
Definitely, yeah. So another great story you folks will read in the book. And number one bestseller for the past 3 weeks, Shift Work, right, Ty?
Yeah, it is. Number one on Amazon, too. I'm on all that social media, I told you, like you.
Yeah.
I'm on this Instagram now, so if people want to see what I've been doing, they can look up Ty_Domi, and they'll see what I've been doing on this book tour. And I've had this huge trailer go around me all across the country. It's been pretty cool. I've had, been signing at some of these places for 6, 7, 8 hours even. So
wow.
It's been quite overwhelming.
Success. You played your 1,000th game in 2006. You scored your 100th goal the same year. But Pat Quinn came along, scratched you for a game against the Islanders, and you got kind of upset about that.
Yeah, it wasn't really his call. It was the general manager at the time. And,
okay.
You know, he felt totally threatened by me and intimidated by me for some unknown reason. But Pat Quinn actually, after the fact, and, you know, I knew that the GM was trying to get me out, but I also knew he wanted him out too. So, and it was actually the games against the Montreal Canadiens, and we ended up missing the playoffs that year. And it was back-to-back against Montreal, and he sat me out for both games. And I thought I could have made a bigger difference. They dressed a Russian kid who was a rookie who didn't really know the history and the pressure and all that. And we ended up getting beat 5-0 in the first game, and we ended up losing the second game too. So a few years later, you know, Pat was a real stubborn Irish guy, never apologizes or he's never wrong, just like most guys, but he actually, we were at a mutual friend's funeral at the time, and he came up to me and he said, "Son, I owe you an apology." And I knew what he was going to say. And he just said, you were right. And I didn't have to rub it in his face. I kind of knew, you know.
Exactly, so, yeah, you respect it.
Yeah, and I went out to his funeral in Vancouver, and it was pretty sad. But he was a special man. I had two pretty special coaches in Toronto, and Pat Burns and Pat Quinn, who are no longer with us, but both of them were good buddies and learned a lot from both of them.
Sure. Now, looking back, Ty, who were some of the toughest opponents that you tangled with?
Well, I would definitely have to say Bob Probert, number one, for sure. And then there's Dave Brown. There's so many more guys, you know, Rob Ray.
Rob Ray, yeah.
Donald Brashear, Chris Simon, list goes on. You know, there's all the guys and every single guy that I fought. Actually, I made sure I put in the book because that's the reason why I did the book is to try and get some life lessons and life values across. I didn't really want to talk about why I had the most fights. That was for my teammates.
Sure.
And that was part of my job. So I really wanted to make all those guys proud because they're the reason why
I had the choice of doing a book my way, and because they really wanted to do a book on me, and I chose to do it my way. So, and I told you, people in Chapter 11 are the real reason why I did it, and I say I stick up for those people.
Right.
So the book is kind of all over the place, you know, with my kids, too, that are involved in the technology and change the world. So I see a lot of different funny kind of stories in there, and I try and, you know, captivate the life values and life lessons I try to get across, but also have some humor through it, too.
Sure. Now, for you folks that don't know, Max Domi is indeed Ty's son, and he plays for the Arizona Coyotes in the NHL. How's he doing these days?
He's doing good. He's figuring it out, you know. He had a good game last night, and actually the last couple of games has been pretty good. So, but the team's doing well, and I've been able to watch them, you know, late games. So, but I'll be going out there as soon as it's been there. I'm heading out to Winnipeg and Ottawa. Now, believe it or not, they want to have in Ottawa now, too. So,
oh, boy.
I'm the number one bestseller. So,
moving.
I say a story in a book about the Ottawa. You know, we beat them 5 years in a row in the playoffs. So, the 1 year we were losing and they were going to beat us. And I ended up, you know, a guy hit me and I put my head off the corner of the boards to cut myself so the guy would get a 5-minute major.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah. So, when those fans read that in Ottawa, I don't know if they're going to be too happy, but they're begging for me to come out there, so I'm heading out to Ottawa, believe it or not.
How about New York, Ty? Any plans to stop down here and do a signing?
Yeah, we tried to get all the Christmas stuff and up to Christmas and done in Canada, and New Year going to start focusing on all America, you know?
Sure.
Get some momentum going here in the U.S., but it's... I put the back of my head in the jersey, in my name and like the back of the jersey on the front of the cover. I didn't
right.
want to put my face. it wasn't about me.
Right.
That's why I put me going on the ice because that was part of my job, and that's what I tried to do in the book. And I'm pretty happy how it turned out, I got to be honest.
Sure. Well, we have the book on webcam, and the folks can see the cover with Ty Domi's name there on the back of his jersey, and the name of the book is Shift Work. It's been number one on Amazon, 3 weeks on the bestseller list in Canada. I tell you, Ty, it's been a real pleasure having you with us tonight, and I appreciate you taking time out of your Sunday night to be with us.
No, thank you so much, and I'm so glad you read the book, and hopefully other people get interest and read it, and I'd love to hear everybody's comments and, you know, people, if you look up TyDomi.com and the comments and read the comments people have sent me, it's pretty emotional and it's a great feeling. So I'm glad I'm an author now, trust me.
Outstanding.
Much
All right.
Much better being a fighter.
Beautiful. Thanks again, Ty.
Thank you.
Take care. Ty Domi, ladies and gentlemen. Next up, we'll talk to the great closer from the New York Mets 1986 World Champion Club, Jesse Orozco on Sports Talk 1240. Stay with us, folks.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Hey, fantasy sports fans. DraftPot has an exclusive offer for Sports Talk 1240 listeners. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SPORTSTALK1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit up to $1,500. That's right. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SPORTSTALK1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit up to $1,500. What are you waiting for? Do it now.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GusBuster.com and get your GusBuster today.
Whether you're a couple enjoying a romantic meal for two, a family wanting to dine in a relaxed and friendly setting, or a larger party wanting to celebrate a special occasion, Miller Place Pastoria always combines a warm welcome with the finest contemporary Italian cuisine and wines, also serving up Long Island's favorite pizza. We're located right on Route 25A in Miller Place. Come visit us today and check us out online at mppastoria.com.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
All right, we're back with Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB Freeport, New York. Phil Donahue with you tonight. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving weekend. Hope you're enjoying Sports Talk 1240 tonight. That was a great chat we had with the great Ty Domi there. I hope you guys enjoyed it. My next guest holds the Major League record for career pitching appearances, having pitched in 1,252 games, most notably for the New York Mets in the 80s. He won a World Series there with the Mets, as we know, in 86 and 88 with the Dodgers, a year we'd soon rather forget. He retired in 2003 after having been with the Mets, the Dodgers, the Indians, Brewers, Orioles, Cardinals, San Diego Padres, the Yankees, and back with the Minnesota Twins where he started. He retired when he was 46, one of the oldest players to still be playing in the modern age, and he's only one of 29 players in baseball history to have appeared in the major leagues in four decades. Two-time All-Star as well. Welcome to the show, Jesse Orozco.
Oh, thank you, Bill. Appreciate it.
It's great That's having awesome you with now. Us. Great having
oh,
you with
you.
Us, Jesse. Now, your longevity, for folks that don't know, you were the player to be named later in the deal that sent Jerry Kuzman to the Twins.
Yes. That was I had a very short stay when I signed with Minnesota and then played winter ball and threw the ball pretty well with the Twins and Miners, and then I was traded, and I'm going, whoa, I guess the Twins didn't like me.
Yeah.
Little did I know that I got a golden opportunity. One of the starters went out for the Mets, and so I threw the ball really well in spring training. I went straight to big league camp and threw a bunch of zeros on the board, and next thing I know, I'm getting called in the office and thinking I'm getting sent down. And Joe Torre, first thing he said, hey, you have a sports coat? I was like, no. And he says, well, you better get one because you're going to New York. And that's all we wrote.
Oh, boy. Yeah, can't beat that. Now, you played for Joe Torre twice, Jesse, with the Mets in 79 and 81 and then with the Yankees in 2003. What was the difference in Torre as the Mets manager compared to the Yankees in 2003?
He seemed the same person. I mean, mm-hmm. No change. I mean, he didn't get, like, over his head or too confident or anything. You know, he did the same thing over and over. And, I mean, he just had success as he kept going. This was the start of his career right around that time when he was with the Mets and it started mining. And so it's just amazing. You know, 24 years later, he's my manager, and he's one of few World Series, he just did a phenomenal job through his career as a player and a manager.
He sure did. Yeah, he deserves his place in Cooperstown.
Now, yeah, and he's also in Major League Baseball doing a fantastic job overseeing everything.
He is, definitely. Now, you came up in the Joe McDonald era. You witnessed the change to Frank Cashin. George Bamberger came in as the skipper. What did you notice as the new ownership settled in, Jesse?
Just changes kept going along. We didn't really stay with a consistent manager. Like my first 4 years, we went from, like I said, George Bamberger, Frank Howard,
right.
Yeah, and up to Davey Johnson, who lasted a little longer than those guys. But I was young, upcoming, and you know, they saw something in me. And I can remember George Bamberger in 1983 spring training. You know, he's watching me just kind of working out, throwing my bullpens, and he comes up to me, and you know, he's got this little accent, and he looks at me, he goes, "Let me tell you something, boy." He goes, "I like your stuff, but I think you can work on that breaking ball, and I think you can get really strong and be successful with it." And yeah. So as a young guy, I'm saying, whatever you want me to do, I'll do it.
Exactly.
So he started working with me and started working. So start building up your forearm and your wrist and everything, your arm, your shoulder. And I did, and then he taught me a certain way how to throw this breaking ball, and I started throwing it in spring training. And then he just told me at the start of the season, "It's all yours now. Use that breaking ball," and I did, and it's
nice.
Phenomenal.
But by 83, Jesse, some of the new guard was arriving. Some was already on the scene, like Mookie. Darryl came in, Wally Backman. Then Davey Johnson was brought in. And for those folks unfamiliar with the situation, this all kind of pieces together because Jerry Kuzman, the guy that Jesse Orozco was traded for, was on the mound for the last out of the World Series in 1969. Jesse was on the mound for the last out in 1986, and the batter that Kuzman faced to hit the last out was Davey Johnson.
Right.
So it's funny how this game pieces all together. It's like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Everybody's related.
Right, exactly. It's, yeah, and just, you know, fortunate to be in a situation like that, and you know, seeing so much happen in baseball, and you know. Funny plays, great plays, everything, and just things like that, you know, it's memorable.
It sure is. We're speaking to Jesse Orozco tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Let's talk about some of the guys on that great 86 team, Jesse. How about Darryl Strawberry?
Darryl, what can we say? The guy was phenomenal. He was probably he looked very thin.
Mm-hmm.
But with no shirt on, the man had ripples all over his body. I mean, he was just very, very strong. And he just had quick reactions. He can turn on any kind of pitch, and he just drove the ball. He was like the Dave Kingman. It didn't hit him as high as Dave Kingman, but he could hit him as far.
Yeah, great comparison. Now we look to the mound and we talk about a guy who in his prime and in his day was as dominant as anybody I've ever seen, Dwight Gooden.
Yes. Dwight was phenomenal. He was that number one starter that any team would want. We were the lucky ones to have him. His stuff was incredible. When I saw him come up and they said, "This guy's, you know, like the number one pick, and he's going to be our future," I started seeing him throw bullpens, and I'm going, "Oh, my gosh. I hope he doesn't go in the bullpen."
Yeah.
Short career.
Yeah.
His curveball was just incredible, how much spin it had on it and the bite. And then not to mention, you know, throwing 95-plus. But the funny thing with Dwight is that if there was nobody on base, he was probably pitching about 93 to 96. When somebody got in scoring position, he started pumping up high 90s.
Oof. He'd dial it up. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like you say, Jesse, guys would have to screw themselves out of the dirt when he threw that big curveball that dropped right off the table.
Oh, yeah. No, it was fun to see. I mean, in 1984, when he was I think he won like 17 games or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, I was the closer at the time, and so I had to go in and save his games. And I know how much attention he was getting now with the press. And I'm in the bullpen going, "Oh my gosh, I gotta save his games or I'm gonna be hung." So the press was on me.
Definitely, yeah. Now two other guys we look at on that ball club that were surely leaders. And Keith Hernandez, when he came over to this ball club, he certainly made a difference.
He sure did. Keith was tremendously sharp about the game. Not to mention that he was an outstanding athlete, one of the best first basemen I've ever seen. And I would say there's been some first basemen that had maybe a little bit quicker with the legs, stuff like that. But Keith made up with his instincts, and I tell you what, I felt comfortable on the mound all the time, because if any ball's hitting the hole or something, Keith would get dirty and knock that thing down. All he was trying to do was protect us pitchers from giving up runs and things like that. So he was good. He was a great team leader, and he was vocal on the field and even in the clubhouse. If the guys looked like they were kind of getting a little lackadaisical, Keith would let them know, and that's the kind of guy you need on a team.
You sure do. Nobody played the bunt like him either. I remember that. Oh boy.
Oh my God. Yeah. He'd get in there so deep into home plate.
Yeah. He'd be right on top of the batter.
He would. I mean, he was giving himself up. So, he'd take a chance. I mean, that's the grit he had.
Sure. Now one guy, Jesse, that is described a lot of times as the final piece to the puzzle, and that's the great Hall of Famer, Gary Carter.
Of course. God bless his soul. We were sorry to lose Gary, but tell you what, he was a fantastic guy. I had the pleasure of playing with him for about 4 years, and he was fun to have on the team. Guys would kid around him because, he enjoyed the success, and we'd love to be in front of the camera, so we gave nicknames for him and things like that. But it didn't bother him. He was going to be himself, but tell you what, he gave it on the field every day. And we all know in baseball, a catcher is just a bag of punishment waiting to happen. They know that they're going to get rocked around the field day in, day out. But those guys that go out there and play 155, 162 games they're just true warriors, and Gary is one of those guys.
Sure is, definitely. And as you say, he's missed. One other guy I want to ask you about, Jesse, your bullpen mate, Roger McDowell. Now, he came along, I believe it was 85, and you had to share closing responsibilities with Roger. How did you feel about that?
I had no problem with it. I mean, I was a closer and, set-up guy like Roger and I were, when it happened to us, but in 82. And it was great because I had the opportunity to be in late games with our closer. So it worked out as far as innings, opportunities to pitch. And when Roger came over, and I mean, how could I say no to him? The guy had phenomenal stuff. His ball fell off the table. He just had great stuff, and he was one of those guys that can. I mean, he almost won the ERA title 1 year, or qualified for it as a reliever. And that, you have to throw 160-something games, 160-something innings. And so I think the one thing that was great about it is that we had somebody to go to every day. So if I pitch one day and threw three innings, Davey would just say, Jess, you're not pitching tomorrow. Roger's got the next day. He's going to go out there and throw two, three, four innings, whatever it is. And I think that was great for both of our arms. That probably helped me for a few years and to learn my arm. And that's why I was able to throw tons of innings and appearances in my career.
Sure. Now, let's move to 1986. Phenomenal season for the Mets. For the kids who missed it, you missed something else. We'll go to Game 6 of the NLCS. You come in the 14th inning. You give up a home run right away to Billy Hatcher. We all remember that right off the foul pole down in the Astrodome. Talk a little bit about Game 6 in the NLCS, Jesse.
Well, I had pitched in four of the five games, so I pitched in five of the six overall.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I felt great. Everything was going good. I remember that game kept going on, and in Houston, the dugout was about a mile long on both sides. And I remember just running back and forth every time we'd score a run or a base hit. And by the time that those late innings came, and David said, "Jesse, get ready." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I got to take a breather for a second." And you know, but I was ready to go. And yeah, you know, they gave me a one-run lead, and next thing I know, before I know it, a couple guys out, and then Hatcher hit that home run. You know, Lord knows the game's not over. That's the good thing about it. So I had a battle from there, and so I had to go two more innings. We were fortunate to get some more runs, and I was getting tired, you know, for pitching according to a third inning, so I threw a lot of pitches that game. And so Davey came out, and this little story about Carter and Hernandez saying that, you know, "I'm going to beat you up if you, if you throw another fastball." Well, when Davey came out, I walked behind the mound, and I just trying to collect myself, get rested. So Davey came up to me and just he goes, "Jess, you're not coming out of the game." He says, "I'm going to win it or I'm going to lose it with you." Mm-hmm. I mean, that right there, I just, you know, it made me feel good about myself saying, "Hey, you know what, I'm his guy." And so I just had to battle through it, and so it came down to Kevin Bass and myself, and actually the whole inning, I had not thrown one fastball. I'd just been throwing breaking ball after breaking ball. And, I mean, for me to throw a 3-2 breaking ball tells you about my fastball.
Yeah, exactly.
I wasn't losing my velocity on my fastball, just my ball started getting really straight. Just didn't have a good finish on it, but and they were seeing it better, and so that's when my breaking ball, actually my breaking ball broke bigger because I was starting to get, I was getting tired, so but I was able to control it too, so oh boy, I was just so happy when he swung through that pitch, and that's all she wrote. You know?
So were a lot of other people, Jesse. that was Kevin Bass. That was struck out to end that ball game and the series. And three wins for our guest tonight on Sports Talk 1240, Jesse Orozco, in that 1986 NLCS. We'll move on to the tremendous World Series against the Boston Red Sox. Now, Game 6, Jesse, where were you for that 10th inning?
I was relaxing in the clubhouse. I'd already
okay.
been. I faced Buckner around the 7th, 8th inning maybe. And so I went in. I started watching the game in there. I couldn't bear to see what was going on because it was not going our way.
Right.
So as the game kept going, and then we started that rally with, you know, the base hits, there was a few of us in there, and we started throwing on football helmets from our favorite football team back then. And trying to get a rally going, like just like we'd see in a dugout in the game, and you see all the guys put their hats, you know.
Right.
Rally caps. Stuff like that. Rally caps. And so I was trying to do that in the clubhouse. It was, you know, I thought it was over. I mean, it just, they had a lot of momentum going throughout the series. And, but that's the team we were. We just didn't know how to give up. You know, we had a ton of come from behind wins during the season.
Exactly.
They were to have those.
The Mets were relentless.
Yeah, we were. You have to have those. I mean, if you split, let's say, 20 games, you know, your odds are not that good. You need to win the majority of them, and we did that. That just showed the character of our team, that never giving up.
Definitely. Now, Game 7, Jesse, you come in the 9th inning. You're facing the top of the Red Sox order. But by now, as you say, the momentum has shifted. The wind's kind of out of their sails. But you still had to face Boggs during that inning. Talk a little bit about that.
Did you say the 7th inning or the...
The 9th inning.
The ninth inning. Yeah, I mean, we had gotten another one or two insurance runs, and that gave me a little more relief, and you know, because it was a one-run game when I came in, and in the 8th inning, but then we stretched it out to a 3-run lead. That, you know, I would take that cushion any time in my life, and
sure.
You know, the guys did it, and I was also a little responsible for that too. I got a base hit. What am I?
You did.
Very
yes.
Few hits in my lifetime.
Amazing. Yeah, that was a tremendous opportunity you had, and you came through. Now, you strike out Marty Barrett, and there's euphoria on the club. Did you think about what you were doing, throwing your mitt up in the air? And it really became an iconic moment, not only in Mets history, but in baseball history. It's shown on a lot of highlight reels. Did you ever give a thought to what you would do in that situation?
No, I didn't. But friends have called me and say, "What are you gonna? If you throw the last pitch, what are you gonna do? Are you gonna do a dance? You're gonna do this?" I said, "Guys, I don't know what I'm gonna do. I'm just I want us to win. That's all that matters." And when that moment came, and I threw that last pitch, and it just whatever happened, that was just joy. You know what I'm saying? And
well, you did a good job. Yeah.
Thank you. I mean. And I had to hurry up. I had to get up real quick because, 220-pound Carter's coming.
Carter was on his way, yeah.
I know. I got him just in time. But I didn't feel a thing. Even when everybody jumped on me, it was just pure joy. I think the whole year kind of sunk in right there and say, we did it. Because I remember when we won the playoffs in Houston, and when I saw my wife after the game and we were getting ready to go back to New York, I started kind of like whimpering a little bit, like crying of happiness.
Yeah.
And I said, this was probably the hardest series. You have to get to the playoffs in order to make it the World Series. So that was probably more grinding than the World Series.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I definitely think so. Now, to move on from 86, Jesse, so much ahead for this team, so a tremendous future. How did it feel for the ball club to falter in 87, be decimated by injuries? What was the feeling on the ball club during 1987?
We pretty much had the same team. I think, Kevin McReynolds came over to us.
Right.
And, he's a very successful ball player. It was injuries. I was hurt that year myself. I didn't get the time that I wanted in, or even the performance. I think I dropped down a little bit that year. I felt like I worked as hard as I've always worked every year, and I don't know if we had the pressure on our back to have to win again or whatever happened, but it wasn't fun because we felt that we could have been, that team right there could have probably had get a dynasty going. Talking about a dynasty is like when you win two or three World Series in a certain amount of time, kind of like what the Giants just did or what the Yankees have done at times. That defines something. And I thought the team we had with that pitching staff we had, and we had we had speed, we had everything going for us, and it was kind of heartbreaking that I thought we should have won maybe another World Series.
Definitely.
Within a couple of years of that time.
Yes. Soon after you leave the Mets, traded to the Dodgers, three-team trade, so many players involved. Kevin Tappany and Wally Whitehurst came to the Mets. Jesse goes to the Dodgers. Did you feel deflated going to L.A. from the Mets after that, Jesse?
Well, I saw it coming, a trade coming, because Randy Myers was on his way.
Mm-hmm.
Randy was going to be our new young star. They wanted to bring him up the year before, but they wanted to make sure that he was ready, so they let him play another year. And I stood around in 87, and then I saw it coming after that for 1988, and Randy was ready,
mm-hmm.
so. I mean, I definitely wanted to stay in New York with that team. It just turned out it didn't work out. It did work out in a sense that I won a World Series the next year, but it was pretty hard after we beat the Mets.
Yeah.
In the playoffs, and I went over to the clubhouse to go see the guys and everything, and the guys were all hugging each other, and the guys were wishing me, all the best and stuff like that. That's the kind of guys we were. We were teammates. Sometimes, guys venture off in different directions, but memories never end.
Sure. A lot of people fault Cashin for breaking up that ball club, but as we say, history. Well, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about what Jesse Jr. is involved with, Jesse. And that's his new app where he connects people around the country with pro athletes real time for private lessons and physical therapy. Talk a little bit about that.
Yes, my son Jesse, he played about 4 years of professional baseball. He had signed with the Diamondbacks and, you know, played a couple of years there, and then he went to the Padres, and then he kind of floated around a little independent baseball to end his career. But he found it was pretty tough getting through the minor leagues, and so but he didn't give up on baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And so as the little time went on, he started doing pitching lessons and teaching kids how to pitch. And then after that, when he, you know, kept thinking about things, and then he thought of this app. The app is called Home Field Academy.
Right, homefieldacademy.com is the website, folks. You can check that out as we speak.
He's the founder of it, and he's done a lot of homework on this thing, and it's actually kind of it's open now, but it's all about. This is on, like, through your mobile devices.
Mm-hmm.
And so you do real-time lessons, whether they're 30-minute lessons, could be clinics, it could be one-hour lessons, whatever, and you're going face-to-face on phone. And so the beauty of it is, like, you can be anywhere. I could be at a mall, and my lesson starts at 3:30. Well, I can do my lesson 30 minutes just walking around.
Yeah,
with my phone, and teach the kids what they need to do.
Right. The goal, folks, as Jesse Jr. says on homefieldacademy.com, is to bridge the gap between the daily training for the kid and the traditional academy or hitting or pitching fielding lesson experience.
Right. And also, you know, that some families have to pick up, grab all the belongings, get their kids to school, take them out of school. They got to take them home. They got to feed them. They got to change into their baseball uniforms. They have to go to an academy or somewhere to get their lessons. So
right.
It's a full day for a kid. So now this one right here where the kid could just take his lesson in his garage or he can take it in his backyard. And I think that takes a lot of – that's going to take a lot of relief off families that they – it'll be easier for them to do this.
Exactly. Check into this, folks. It's called Home Field Academy, and the website, of course, homefieldacademy.com. That's Jesse Jr.'s new enterprise. I tell you, Jesse, it's been a real pleasure having you with us tonight. I thank you for taking the time out of your Sunday night to be with us.
Thank you. And just last but not least, the app is free.
Okay.
And you can go from there, and then the beauty of this is you're going to be working with professional baseball players from minor leagues, and you're going to be working with major league players. So you're going to have a large collection in the future of players, your favorite players or whoever you want to use. So, I mean, we want to make this experience.
Excellent. Thanks, Jesse. I appreciate you being with us tonight.
You're welcome. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Jesse Orozco, folks. That'll do it for me tonight on Sports Talk 1240. I'd like to thank my guests, Ty Domi and Jesse Orozco, and you, of course, for joining us. Stay tuned for hour number two on Sports Talk 1240. I'll be back on Sunday, December 6th, when my guests will include former Syracuse star and NFL Hall of Famer Floyd Little. Till then, Bill Donahue wishing you a good evening, folks.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.